Hi, fans. Nice to have you back with us. And, you know, every once in a while, a book comes across my table here. And I say, boy, that is one that I want to recommend to everybody very seriously. And I went through this with the Casey Stengel book, with the Mickey Mantle book, the Sandy Koufax book, the Leo DeRocher book, the Lou Gehrig book. And fans, this one is called Yogi, Y-O-G-I. It's a life behind the mask, the story of Yogi Berra. It is written by John Pessa. John is a New York Times best-selling author of The Game. He's also the founding editor of ESPN, the magazine, where he ran the investigative team. He's a great baseball fan, and he has put together what I think is the comprehensive story of the great Yogi Berra. John, welcome to the show, and congratulations on a terrific book.
Marty, so much. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, I've been doing these shows for a number of years, and I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and Yogi used to torment me with the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Yankees. But I will tell you this, I never realized how good he was and where he hit in the order and what he meant to the Yankees until I read this book, and that is what I took out of it right away. I never realized Yogi was that dramatic of an impact player, and you nail it very well. So let's talk about how this project started and a little bit of some of the things you learned.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what. I was born in 1952, so I'm 8 years old when I really start following baseball, and 1960. And Yogi Berra at that point is a role-playing outfielder, still hitting 20 home runs a year, you know, a really good player. But he's not the main man. And my father was diehard Yankee fan, which is why I'm a Yankee fan, which is why my kids are Yankee fans, and now my 19-month-old grandson is a Yankee fan. And his favorite player was Yogi Berra. And he told me that this guy was just an incredibly dynamic player and dominant player in the 50s. And, you know, I mean, the Yankees had so many great players during that time, and it's like, okay, that's fine. And when it came time for me to write my second book, I just kept thinking about this. So I really wanted to go back and take a look. And you look at the stats, which is jump off the page. I mean, you know, 1949 to 1953, the Yankees win 5 straight World Series. No team's ever done it before. No team has done it since. And the dominant player on that team isn't Joe DiMaggio, who's at the end of his career, nor Mickey Mantle, who was at the beginning of his career and struggling with striking out all the time. It's Yogi Berra, who's hitting 20 home runs a year, knocking in 100 runs, batting, you know, 290 to 320, almost never striking out. He struck out an average of 23 times a game, and he's catching every single game. I mean, in 1950, he catches 148 games. He averaged 141 games, and Casey Stengel was asked why he caught Yogi Berra so much, and he said, "When I catch Mr. Berra, we win championships." So I just had to go back and really look at that player, and, you know, as you were saying, I mean, the stats just jump off the page, but then you go back and you start reading about the stories and how, I mean, the person who, the player who followed DiMaggio batting fourth, which was the place to bat in a lineup back then, wasn't Mickey Mantle. It was Yogi Berra, and it was Yogi Berra right into 1960. So, yeah, I was really surprised, and you know, your father is you know, especially when you're growing up, sometimes your father, you think he doesn't know as much as you do. But wow, did he nail this one? He was a great, great player.
Well, a great story. The book is Yogi, Y-O-G-I, Yogi, A Life Behind the Mask. John Pessa, P-E-S-S-A-H, is the author. And it's one of my best, honestly. I really enjoy it. And, of course, I grew up a lot during that era, so I remember a lot of the things you talk about. But Yogi didn't look like the typical number four hitter. He took a lot of abuse, a lot of kidding. It was the great Bill Dickey that made him into the great catcher he was. But, Mantle went his way with Ford and Bauer and those guys and Billy Martin. And Yogi kind of just did Yogi, and DiMaggio did his thing, and Yogi was a little different than everybody physically and as a person.
Well, he definitely didn't look like a baseball player, and I think that one of the only mistakes, or certainly the biggest mistake of Branch Rickey's career, Yogi Berra is 17 years old. Red Chambings told me just a great story about a tryout that like 2,000 kids went to, advertised in the newspaper, which was open tryout, which they used to do back in those days, and Yogi's 17, or actually 16, and Red was 18, and it got down to 8 players, and they go off to a private park where it's just Ricky and the coaches, and Red tells me that it was his turn to pitch, and he pitched to Yogi, and he just couldn't get anything past the guy, and no matter where he threw it, even if it was a ball, and he said he never heard the ball hit the bat the way Yogi hit the ball. And Dickie offered a contract to Joe Garagiola, who was Yogi's across the street neighbor from the time they were 4 and 5, offered a contract to Red Shandings, and was kind of forced into offering a small bonus to Yogi, who was stunned. Branch Rickey told him that, I'm telling you this for your own good. You're only a AAA. You're never going to be more than a AAA baseball player. And we're looking for people who can go all the way. And one of the things that Rickey was supposed to be able to do was look at a kid. And, baseball is the hardest sport to project what a player is going to be when he's an adult. And he was supposed to be able to look at a kid and see what he was going to be as a man, and that's what made him such a great talent scout. And Joe Garagiola was, even at 15 years old, was, 6 foot, 175 pounds. He looked like the prototypical athlete. And that's who he picked to be catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. And that's how then Larry Barra goes off to play American Legion ball for 2 years, which is where he picks up the nickname Yogi. And after 2 years, the head of the American Legion team out there wrote George Weiss a telegram and said, I got a kid here who does everything wrong, but it all turns out right, and all you got to do is spend $500 on a bonus, and he'll take anything you give him as a salary, and you're going to get a great player. And, boy, was he right.
Boy, what a great story. You tell it so well. Yogi, of course, a three-time MVP. Three-time MVP in the 50s. But his story, it's funny. Last night I listened to, during this period of time, I'm listening to a lot of old games on tape. And I listened to the seventh game of the World Series, 1960, called by Mel Allen. And the ninth inning.
Yeah.
And it's the top of the ninth inning, and the Yankees are down 9-8. And it's first and third. Mantle's on first. Dale Long is on third. Harvey Haddix is pitching. And who comes up? Yogi Berra. And after reading the book and reading about Yogi, it just hit home to me last night. I said, my God, what a perfect scenario. Yogi's coming up. He's the biggest clutch hitter they've ever had. And the game is on the line. One out, tying run at third. And he hits a rocket to first base. The Rocky Nelson, the first baseman, Spears, steps on the bag, and Mantle gets back because there's no force. And Dale Long scores, and Yogi knocked in the tying run. Nobody really remembers it. Yogi set a record for most RBIs in the total World Series, which he was in so many of them. But what hit me last night, John, why I'm saying it to you today, is it never dawned on me how perfect it was for Yogi to be up in that situation for the Yankees. Yeah. And it worked out because Mantle had great base running, but Yogi was the guy up there. And I never realized it until reading the book.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Nelson just made a great play on that, too. I mean, that had double written all over it. And men on second, third, maybe men will even score. So he makes a great play. They tie the game. And, before that game, they were sitting in the clubhouse, and this was so un-Yogi-like. He tells the AP reporter, going, I can't believe we're tied with this team. We are so much better than them. I just can't believe it. And then he looks at the reporter and says, you can't write that. And the writer looks at him and says, why not? He goes, well, it's great. I'm not trying to put them down. It's great that they can hang in with us, but we're just so much a better team. And then he looks over at Mantle and he goes, Mick, should I say that on the record? And Mantle goes, well, if you don't, I will. and then he tells the writer, he goes, okay, go ahead. And then they're both quoted in the paper before the seventh game of the World Series, talking about how much better of a team. And if you remember those scores, I mean, the Yankees won games 14-3 and 12-0. I mean, they were just crushing the Pirates, and the Pirates were winning games by one run. You know, and then that game comes up, and of course, you know, the Yankees are ahead by, what, 3 runs when the ball is hit to Tony Kubek. And I didn't know this until I'm a lifelong Yankee fan, and I just remember the ball hitting a pebble and hitting Tony Kubek in the throat. I didn't know that it hit him so bad that they took him to the hospital because they thought it might have fractured his larynx.
That's right.
And his windpipe. And so, you know, I talked to Ralph Terry about that game. And, you know, growing up, people of you know, baby boomers like me, Ralph Terry was a dirty word and because of that home run. And, you know, and I talked to him, and he's the nicest guy. And we're talking about that game. He says, you know, Casey had me up by the third inning, and by the time I came into that game, I was already tired. But that wasn't it. There was no mound in the – remember they used to have bullpens used to be on the side of the field. Mm-hmm. So there was no mound at Forbes Field. So he was pitching off a flat surface. And then he gets up on the mound, and he knows that he's got to keep the ball down because Mazurowski's a high ball hitter. And his first pitch is a slider, and it doesn't slide. And, you know, the ball's hit, and Yogi immediately knows it's over his head. He turns around. He's playing it off the wall. Mantle's behind him in case Yogi misplays it. And they both stood there and stared as that ball flew over the fence. Oh, you know, that, and that was a high wall. And they were just absolutely shattered. Mantle just goes to pieces in the locker room crying, and he wasn't the only one. And that was – Yogi called – that. Yogi said that was just the most bitter defeat of his life.
Yeah, well, that and Sandy Amrose's catch in 1955 that he lived with for many, many years.
Many, many years. Yeah. I'll tell you what, they were praying – they didn't say this publicly, but they were praying, you know, that the Dodgers were going to win the pennant in 56. And they did. I mean, it came down, you know, to the right to the end, and they win the pennant. And Yogi calls up his father because his mother suffered from diabetes. And she was going, she was already blind, and she was going into the hospital to have her leg amputated. Diabetes back then was a much more serious disease. Not that it's not serious, but it was life-threatening back then. And she's going into the hospital to get her leg amputated, and Yogi calls up his dad. This is the day before the World Series, and said, Pop, I'm coming home. He was very close to his mother. He was the youngest of 4 sons. And his father said, no. He goes, no, Pop, I really think I got to be there. And he said, your mom wants you to stay there and play. And he did. And he called her after every game. And after the sixth game, before the sixth game, which the Yankees could have clinched, she asked him to hit a home run for her. And you know, you being a Dodger fan, that the Dodgers won that game in extra innings. And
well,
then
not
the
next
game,
day, though, I remember that quite well. When
yeah,
he hit the grand
game,
slam off Newcomb.
And you know, one of the really interesting things. This tells you a lot about Yogi too. So there's a 23-year-old pitcher, Johnny Cox, and he lost his spot in the rotation. He was a sinker ball pitcher, but he kind of slumped at the end of the season. And Casey didn't name the pitcher for the seventh game. And Casey's way of telling pitchers was by putting a ball in their cleat. So they walk into the locker room, and they find, and that's how Larson found out that he was pitching game 5 in that series. And so Yogi keeps telling Casey, he goes, pitch the kid. He's a sinker ball. We're going to Ebbets Field. We got to keep the ball in the park. Pitch the kid. And so Yogi gets his way. And on the way out into the bus from Yankee Stadium to Ebbets Field, he walks up to the kid and he goes, well, kid, you got a chance to be a hero and you got a chance to be a bum today. Don't blow it.
I love it. Great story. Yogi is the book, and John tells the story so well. You can tell how researched it is and how much he knows about Yogi Berra and the life he lived. And we've just touched upon half of the story because he has a whole other life as a manager, as a businessman, and you know, all the things that go on in his life, and that's all in the book. And, John, we could talk for an hour about the about this book, but it's just a pleasure to have you on. And you had fun with this, I can tell.
I really did. And I really learned a lot of things. And, you know, one of the things that you were talking about finding out, you know, just what a great player he was, I think that Yogi's persona, you know, and everyone just knows who Yogi Berra is, you know, and has this image in their head of who Yogi Berra is. I think that actually overshadows just what a great baseball player he was. I mean, that's definitely one of the things that I learned when researching this book. And it really was, I mean, it took me 4.5 years, and it was hard to stop because it was just so much great stuff. And he was just such a fascinating man. And he lived 90 years, and they were all, I mean, most of the time you write a biography in the last 20 years, you know, you can wrap up in a chapter. I mean, you could write a whole book about Yogi's last 20 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. What we talked about is just the beginning of the story. There's a whole other story that fans will like. Well, you have that New York accent. You have that.
Oh, I am told.
You have that Lowell Cohn sound that he grew up in Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn, and it's nice to hear your voice. And it's a pleasure having you on. And I know the book can be gotten everywhere in our independent bookstore in Montclair. The Book Tree, I'm sure, has got it if David's available up there. So great having you on. You're welcome anytime. I love talking ball with you. It's a pleasure getting to know you. And congratulations on a really good book.
Marty, thanks. This has been a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. And anytime you want to talk baseball, yeah, just give me a call. I'd love to do it.
I'm doing it. Yeah, be safe. Thank you, John. Thank you.
You too. Take care.
All right, that is John Pessa. The book is Yogi, A Life Behind the Mask, the story of Yogi Berra. More coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.